so much for joining Hashtag No Limits. This is Shelley Kino. I am your host. And Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who bust through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. I believe that to be 100% true, and that there is not a better or more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. Quick science lesson for those who don't know, the caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, and then it reforms into the butterfly in that cocoon, but it's not finished. It has to struggle in order for its wings to be able to carry it everywhere it's going to go once it gets out of the cocoon. None of that can be easy, but neither is busting through limits that society places upon a person. And so today I'm going to be bringing on a guest, and she has a great approach to busting through limits, and I'm excited for her to share that with you. But first, we got to do the business things. So make sure if you are watching that you like or subscribe. And if you are watching live, give us a hashtag live and where you're from. Or if you're watching in the replay, hashtag replay and where you're from. And if you have any comments or any thoughts whatsoever, be sure to pop them in the chat and I will pull them up. And Shannon and I can both see them and answer them right away. If you're in the replay, I'll make sure to look at the responses. And if it's something that needs to go to Shannon, I will make sure that she gets that. All right. Enough about me. Let me bring Shannon on. Shannon, welcome. And thank you so much for joining me today as you have burst out of the unusual snowstorm that you have had in your area.
Yes. Yes. I really enjoyed listening to you describe the process with the caterpillar and the butterfly, because I can relate to that with respect to my business, my life, motherhood, and of course, creating a path for myself that I was on, and then having the rug pulled completely out from under me and having to pivot and adapt and adjust when, you know, having a daughter who became ill suddenly and just trying to figure out, you know, it's going through that struggle. It's wonderful to think of becoming a butterfly. I still think I'm in the midst of growing my wings and becoming a butterfly, but it sure does give you a sense of hope about the struggles that you go through. So I liked that. And yes, we did have a once in a lifetime snowstorm last week, which was, it was such a gift. I know for people who live in snow, I'm sure they don't think of it that way. But for those of us who don't have snow on a regular basis, it was such a unique and wonderful surprise. And for a lot of kids in this area, it may be the one and only time they ever experience snow. So for that, I was truly grateful. And I was also grateful that it only took a couple of days to melt.
Yeah, so, I'm sure.
I don't drive in it.
Yeah. When you don't have the equipment and the materials to get rid of that sort of thing, it can be a little scary, but also very beautiful. And the pictures that I saw across the southern region of the United States, that, you know, these places that never have snow and were getting snow, and the excitement that that a lot of people had. I also know there were a lot of people that did not like it and, you know, didn't care for it at all. But I reached out to Mrs. D's Corner and said, so what do you think of this? And she's like, it's beautiful. I love it. It's great. And I said, and has it started to melt already? And she's like, yeah, it'll be gone in a day or two.
And for those who don't know how to drive, it was testing a lot of people's ability. I think there were a lot of people who felt like they knew how to drive in snow. But a good friend of mine driving to work told me about cars spinning out and kind of just all over the place, sliding all over the road. I didn't even try. I grew up in Arizona, in the Phoenix area, not Flagstaff, and I have no experience driving in snow. And so for me, it was just a nice 3-day stay at home, enjoy the snow, make a snowman. That was pretty much all I did. So, and there were so many snow people that were created across Pensacola, and I'm sure all over the Gulf Coast, that you can check out online. And that was actually a really fun part of the whole experience. So anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, enough about the weather. Tell my audience, you know, what it is that you do, and talk about that journey. You mentioned it just a minute ago of your you know, all the changes. And I do want to say, I think many times, I know this isn't how it really happens for a caterpillar or butterfly, but I think as humans, we are always evolving. And sometimes we are the butterfly and sometimes we're the caterpillar that we still need to, you know, develop into something else.
Yes, no, I agree completely. And with respect to my business, I decided actually way back when my daughters were still in elementary school, I determined that I needed to do something to address the issue of how girls treat one another. And this was after spending hours and hours and hours volunteering at my kids' school and just being given the opportunity to observe the behavior of girls at school. And I watched in absolute astonishment how well girls could bully one another and manipulate one another under the watchful eye of teachers or administrative aides. And they are so, so good at flying under the radar. Yeah. And watching that, it was at that time, I remember going home and having conversations with my mom, who was not just an elementary school teacher. She was both elementary and middle school for a while, but she also had a master's degree in counseling. And I called her and started talking to her about this behavior and said, I can't believe that this still goes on at the rate that it does, considering that I had my own experiences and my own issues in elementary school and beyond. And to the extent that I had chronic stomach aches and I mean, the usual problems in school and problems with friends stuff. And so when I would talk to her about it and said, not only is it just unbelievable to me that it still exists at the level that it does, but it had even gotten worse. And this was before smartphones, social media.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So imagine, I mean, I was looking at it then thinking, wow, this is still such a huge problem and has not been dealt with and has really gotten even worse. And now we're at a point where, I mean, it has just exploded. And social media, when I started this and I really started working on ways that I could start developing tools and activities and things for girls and their parents to participate in, to give them a much better idea of how to relate to one another. This was before girls were dealing with such unbelievably high levels of depression and anxiety. And that is now really at the crux of what I'm trying to do when I go out and talk to parents. And a lot of them are, I don't know if they're really ready to hear some of the things that I talk about, but I have really jumped on this bandwagon of, we need to keep kids off social media. We need to limit their time with phones. We need to actually decide when they should have their first smartphone. And I don't believe it's any time before middle school. In fact, I think the parents should hold out as long as possible. So when I started with all of this, I mean, it was very, the ideas were simple. It's a brand called The Breadcrumbs. I mean, my company is My Crummy World, and it's comprised of Penelope Pumpernickel, Rachel Rice, Samantha Sourdough, Whitney Wheat. They're all made of bread. They leave a trail. It's, you know, the whole idea of being, if you follow a trail of breadcrumbs, you can find your way. And so this trail of breadcrumbs for girls was stories and activities and experiences that taught girls through their own personal struggles, their failures. It taught girls how to be more accepting of who they are and kinder to one another. I mean, that was kind of the basis of all of it. And at the time, my girls, like I said, were in elementary school, and I was putting all this together and getting a lot of great feedback from teachers and counselors and whatnot, and going out and having talks at schools. And this was all going wonderfully at the time. And little did I know that in the midst of this, and as things were kind of picking up, that my daughter would become ill and that she would deal with relational aggression and the cruelty that exists among girls in a way that was so much more magnified. And so that gave me real insight. I thought I knew how bad it was when I started. I had no idea. And I tell you, when I will never forget when I was first giving these talks, I had this visual that showed a girl kind of crouched in the corner, and it said, "Welcome to the jungle." And it showed all the different social media outlets. And I started talking with parents about how you really have to be on guard so that your daughter doesn't become this girl. And fast forward, I recently spoke to a room full of parents where I said, you know, I was that parent who inserted myself into my kid's life in every possible way and was involved in the PTA, was at the school all the time. And still, I mean, I thought I had my finger on the pulse of everything going on in my kids' lives. And my daughter became that girl in my graphic. I mean, she started circling the drain and right under my nose. So to say, you know, it's like, I'm going to bully-proof my kid's life. I'm going to bully-proof my, you know, it's like you do everything you can when you have your first baby to child-proof your home and baby-proof your home so that they never get hurt. And they still, that baby will still find the area that you have neglected. They'll find it. And I feel like that is kind of mirrors right. What happens in our lives with our kids. As much as we do to protect them and as at the lengths that we go to try to make sure that we can keep an eye on everything, it's not going to happen. And so, and especially when you have a child who has special needs or a unique diagnosis or something, you know, some other layer on top of everything else, there's no way to really protect yourself or your kid from all of those things. So talking about it and making parents aware of the things that are out there and what to look for with your kids and in your kids so that you can take steps as soon as possible to try to intervene and just make sure you have the right kind of relationship with your child so that you can discuss the things that are going on. That's a great place to start. But I tell you, just getting into kind of the nitty gritty of where girls are right now in school and what's going on with them is such a huge, it's such a huge problem. And it with so many layers, that it would take a long time to really kind of dive into all of it. But I mean, and I was a part of an anthology that comes out next month called She Grows Stronger. And I actually wrote a chapter for this where I talk in depth about my journey with my daughter. And some parts of it get really raw about, again, thinking that we're in one place, we're in a good place, and finding out the hard way that we're not. And
yeah,
those are wake-up calls that parents just, it's chilling to even think about. And I really feel like we have to start figuring out how to check in with our kids more and make sure. And I know, I'm sure you work with parents all the time when, and trying to kind of give them ideas about, hey, it's nice that you're putting in place a lot of these plans and things that kind of help them navigate the school and ways that will help them with whatever it is that they're dealing with. But that really doesn't protect them from a lot of the social stuff that goes on. And I don't know how, you know, that's something I'm trying to do just by talking to parents and through my brand and the resources that I have and my stories. But that's a difficult conversation to have. And especially if parents don't even know what's coming.
Yeah, it's so true. And I so much appreciate what you said about this bullying was happening right in front of adults and they weren't seeing it. I hear so often my child is being bullied at school, and then we'll go bring that up to the teacher of the classroom or the administration. Oh no, bullying doesn't happen here. Oh no, that's not happening here. And I tell parents that bullying is one of the hardest things to prove and to do something about because of exactly what you just said. It happens so subtly to adults.
Yes.
That it doesn't get picked up on.
And with schools, you know, the biggest problem is that the majority of schools miss the mark when it comes to bullying, because they lay that model that says, okay, we know what bullying looks like. And it is the typical male on male type aggression that's physical, that's visible, and then it's addressed, it's dealt with, mm-hmm. we move on. That is not what it looks like when it comes to girls. Not at all.
Right.
And right. Interesting, because I was at a PTA convention and a principal of a high school said, we have a problem with bullying at our school. And he said, the problem is we can't see it. We know it's there, but we can't see it because it's among the girls, because girls know how to keep it hidden. They know how to, like I said, they fly under the radar. A lot of this is all kinds of relational aggression and manipulation that you cannot just identify on the surface level. And so looking for signs of that, it's a lot harder to do. And especially then you have to bring it up to a teacher, an administrator. And it's, even though I hate to admit this, because I've heard this, I've had other administrators and teachers say to me, sometimes it's incumbent on the teacher to say, yeah, this might be happening, but this happens to be one of my better students or better, you know. There's some favoritism that happens in the classroom sometimes. Right. Teachers don't want to admit that there's a problem with certain students. It's incredible. I mean, you know there's a problem and you want to get to the bottom of it, and you have to deal with a lot of these additional obstacles that is hard for a parent to navigate. So imagine how it is for the student when the parents are having trouble navigating.
Right. Right. Yes. So one of the things that I'm talking about bullying is, you know, a lot of kids will make fun of another kid. You know, they'll try to mimic their voice, or they'll try to say, you know, mimic what they're, how they're holding their cup or their, you know, something. And I had the coolest experience, and it was not intended to be this way, but I thought, oh my gosh, this might be a way to help. Is I was working with some first and second graders, and one of the students was mimicking another student, you know, because of the way he was talking or holding his pencil. And he came up to me and he told me what was going on. And I said, well, you know, that there is a saying that mimicking is the highest compliment that you can give somebody else. And I said, so actually he's complimenting you by, you know, pretending to do what you're doing. And that little boy came up to me many, many weeks later. And he told me, he's like, yeah, I overheard him saying to somebody else, because it was happening to someone else, that they were being mocked because, you know, of the way they talked. And the one that I had said that to said it to another little boy. Well, it's the highest form of flattery, because, you know, so take it as a compliment, not as a negative thing. And it kind of squashed the other, because it was the same person doing it to both boys. And he was like, I don't want to be like you. And, you know,
so. No, it's interesting. You shifted the power. So it's funny, because the power then goes to the person with the behavior who, you know, it's such an interesting thing to do to the person who's actually trying to get that, you know, to evoke that kind of response. All of a sudden they're powerless. And that's, you know, that's kind of what has to happen with girls. And it's really, really hard to do. With my own daughter, so she developed in seventh grade, she developed something called postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS. And it's actually a pretty, it used to not be very common. It has become more recognized and more common also because long COVID has a lot of the same symptoms. It's like a cluster of all kinds of symptoms that POTS has. Well, we found out because she got injured playing a game of flicker ball, which is the sport I can't even describe to you that they had at her middle school. And she was very athletic at the time, and she was even her flicker ball captain. but she sprained her ankle or something. And so she went through a period of deconditioning, and a virus or some kind of deconditioning like that can actually spark. If this is something that they have, it will set off. It's almost like a flare. It sets it off.
Oh, wow.
And so she was in bed a lot and resting and elevating her foot. And it happened right at Christmas. And she said she felt kind of strange. And then a couple of days later, she started fainting. And the first time it happened, we were at the mall, and we'd gotten out of the car, and she took two steps. I mean, she literally got out of the car, took two steps, and down she went right on the asphalt. And at this moment, I mean, I thought, what is she doing? It wouldn't register to me that this was something serious. I thought she was messing around. And it wasn't until I looked at her and she had tears in her eyes, and I realized that she had no idea where she was, that this was something serious. And so I contacted my husband, and we immediately started having her checked out for low iron and all kinds of things. And a couple of days later, I was doing the dishes, and I saw in the corner of my eye, she got up from a chair and took two steps, down she went again. And shortly after that, she started having all kinds of additional symptoms. She not brain fog and just unbelievable fatigue, and her digestion slowed way down. And so she was having chronic stomach issues, and it got to the point where she couldn't get out of bed. And so, I mean, at that time, we didn't know what we were dealing with. I was worried about the amount of school she was missing. I would actually drive her to school. I mean, if she felt like she could go to school, I would drive her to school, and I would just park in the parking lot, and I would wait for her to call me and tell me to take her out of school and take her home.
Wow.
And that was usually maybe an hour and a half tops. And at some point, the guidance counselor called me in and said, "You cannot do this every day. You cannot live your life sitting in the parking lot waiting to take your kid home. I mean, this is not working for you or for her." And so she filled out the 504 paperwork. We got her on hospital homebound. I mean, thank goodness this guidance counselor saved my mental health in that moment, because I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't have a plan. I just thought, I just want her at school. So once we got her on hospital homebound and she was able to do a lot of her homework when she felt up to it, she got to the point where, I mean, we took her out to see, we flew her to see a specialist and had her tested and figured out how we needed to, you know, via drugs and salt water, and how to keep her upright as long as possible. And of course, the school didn't really want her there if she was, you know, a potential fainting risk because of the liability.
Sure.
So we finally got her to the point where she was able to stay upright. She was getting more work done. She was active more throughout the day and was ready to go back to school. And she was so excited about going back to school. I remember, I mean, that it was like Christmas. She just couldn't wait to go back to school and see her friends and be a part of things again. And she went back to school. And of course, this illness that she has, it's an invisible illness. I mean, you look at her, you don't know she's sick. And I remember she got there, and she was kind of met with seventh grade girls who said, "What's wrong with you? You don't look sick."
Right.
"We don't understand."
Yeah.
And she was at a point in her life where it was too hard for her to even explain what was going on with her. She knew that she didn't feel good, but she didn't understand the whole dysautonomia side of things, meaning her autonomic nervous system wasn't functioning correctly. And she couldn't articulate that to these seventh grade girls who were demanding answers.
Right.
And because she couldn't, they started developing their own narratives, everything from, she's faking it, she wants attention. They started saying things even like she drank bleach. I had a teacher call me saying, "Is everything okay with your daughter?" I mean, this was after she'd been at school almost a full day, and I was like celebrating in my mind, she's actually in school and things are good, only to get a phone call from one of her teachers saying, "The rumor around school is that she drank bleach."
Yeah.
I thought, seventh grade girls.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing. And I had a similar experience when I was a senior in high school. Thankfully, my experience was, I don't want to say thankfully, that's not what I meant to say. I was going to say mine is different than hers. Hers was a medical thing and she's able to address it. And mine was, I had attempted suicide. Mm-hmm. And when I came, I was out of school from October 10th until after Christmas break. And of course, you know, senior in high school, girl out of school, I was pregnant. I'd had an abortion. I was, you know, I was in an institution. I mean, because we didn't tell anybody. I was ashamed. My parents were embarrassed, you know, and there was the whole anxiety wasn't a word that was used yep. at that time. And so nobody knew that that's what I had dealt with from such an early age until that point. And yeah, trying to explain like why I felt the way I felt to people, it didn't make sense to other people. And so when something doesn't make sense, I have noticed that people will just not want to believe it because it doesn't make sense to them. So they'll right. make something up that does make sense to them.
Yep. Exactly. They start.
And junior high girls are the worst, by the way.
Terrible. They are terrible. Yeah. That particular age is so, and in fact, when I go out and I talk with parents, I really try to kind of focus in on the fact that with girls, and I know, I mean, this is, I'm sure true with both boys and girls, but with girls, you have an opportunity when they are right about 8 or 9 years old to really change a lot of their behavior because their identities are not really set. And that's girls in kindergarten. And I mean, even before we'll start testing out behaviors and they'll start testing things to see what will pass muster, what will fly and what mm-hmm. won't. So that's, and you know, I talk about this where I use the example of girls saying, if you don't, whatever it is they want to get, you know, whether it's sit by me at lunch or work with me on this project, I won't be your friend anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's a perfect example of relational aggression in its earliest and purest form. And girls test it. Right. They test it to see, is this going to get me what I want? And if it does, then that's where they start to live. It's like, okay, I use this, it works, I'm going to keep doing it. And so parents and teachers have opportunities to really shape and mold this behavior at an early age. And if they don't, if they miss that, then kids start to think this behavior is acceptable. It's normalized. This is what I'm taking with me. I'm going to go right into middle school. And guess what happens? I mean, and this is why you have kids in middle school that think it's okay to create these narratives. They think it's okay. Right. To do, I mean, the type of relational aggression at that point and social media, I mean, there's a whole, and I always talk about it. I don't know if you're familiar with Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation, which is a fantastic book. And I recommend it to everyone because he really gets into how social media is much more harmful for girls than boys and why. And it's because girls are looking for, I mean, the kind of community and communion, as he calls it, that they look for and acceptance, they're not finding on social media. And relational aggression, I mean, you want to talk about a hotbed. Social media is perfect for all kinds of relational aggression because what girls can do when they're behind a keyboard and they can be anonymous
Ooh, yeah.
and they can make up all kinds of additional fake accounts to pile on, it's unbelievable. And when I talk about this with parents and I say to them, if I were a doctor and I stood up here and I told you there was this substance that was so harmful to kids that it created, you know, anxiety and depression and high spiked rates of suicide, and would you eliminate this from your child's life? And across the board, 100%, yes. And I say, okay, guess what? There's something out there that's doing this, and it's social media and it's cell phones. And then they immediately say, oh no, but no, my child needs it for this, 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 and this, and they need to be able to get a hold of me when they're at school. And what if something happens at school? And really a challenge for parents. And we have to reach a point where they start to see the risk is too high, the benefit is too low. I know there's this FOMO that parents have mm-hmm. for their kids that they have to really get a hold of. And whether it's forming alliances with other parents that your kids are friends with, or whatever it is, do what you need to do to start really placing limits on the time they spend on social media and the time they spend on their phones. And I tell you, across the board, I am 100% behind banning phones in schools. And I know when I say that, parents will say, yes, but if there's, you know, some, God forbid, if something really bad happens at school, and I say, if something really bad happens at school, the school will notify you. They have always had the ability, and they will have the ability to notify you. And I'm going to tell you right now, you don't need your child filming whatever's going on at the school, which is what they try to do if they have phones. You know, it's like you don't need them recording the horror that could possibly be happening. And again, the chances of that are, it's a whole risk benefit thing that I really get upset about when I talk about, because it's like the risks are so high for our kids and their mental health and the benefit.
And I think what you said before about FOMO, it's not just fear of missing out. It's fear in general.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and there's also that there is an actual addictive quality to screens.
Yes.
So you add in the addictive quality that parents have, and I'm pointing at myself because, you know, I'm one who will waste way too much time playing games on my phone. And there's then that fear of, well, I don't know this information. I had a conversation with somebody who is the same age as I am a few months ago, and she could not find her daughter. She called her, she texted her, the app that she had that showed where her daughter was, it wasn't working. And she was in complete panic mode because for like 20 minutes, she didn't know where her daughter was. And I get that, because we do live in a very scary society of, you know, things, which I'm not going to mention, but I looked at her and I said, what did our parents do? We didn't have cell phones.
I know.
We were gone for hours at a time. You know, we said, okay, we're going with so-and-so to this place and we'll be back in 5 hours. And they had no clue, you know, but I am guilty. I'm 100%. I get it.
Yeah.
I am guilty too. We live in a very small rural town, like almost a negative crime rate, because the crime that happens, there's an interstate that runs nearby us. And a lot of the crime happens on the interstate, but it counts for our town. And even when our daughter was little, I was very paranoid. She was our only child. Like, I didn't want her walking 8 blocks from our house to her friend's house. My goodness, my parents, I was gone for hours, you know, bike riding, whatever. And so I get that fear. I completely understand that fear. But that cell phone thing, that's, you know, it is, because I think when parents are dealing with, you know, that, you know, if you said it was a drug or a substance, that's easy to set up, throw away, get rid of. But our kids' phones, their tablets, for a lot of families, that's a babysitter.
I know.
And so now you're taking away, or that's not even a babysitter, but it's like, okay, I know my kid is safe for 5 minutes. I can cook dinner, or I can, you know, just have a minute to take a shower, you know, or whatever it is. And we have become so dependent. And I think we got to go back to not exactly the way our parents did it, but something.
Yeah.
And if you research it, you will find that the people who make these apps and have, you know, the like the Facebook and Microsoft, I mean, so many people who have the real knowledge about this stuff don't allow their kids.
Oh, I know. I know. In the research that I have done, just looking at this whole issue, It's interesting in that there's a new form of TikTok that the Chinese use that has, it has greater parental controls than the TikTok that our kids use. And I was listening to a podcast with Jonathan Haidt, and he was talking with another gentleman. I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about trying to do cell phone diets and putting their kids on, cell phone diets or fasts, if you will. Mm-hmm. And in their discussion, a family went on vacation for a week and they told their kids, just as they were leaving, they were going camping, and they said, okay, we're going to collect cell phones. We're going to put them in a box and you're not going to have them for the week of the vacation. And of course, the minute the kids heard this, they were just like, oh no, you can't do this to us. You're cutting us off from our friends. You're cutting us. This is our whole social network. They said, no, this is what we're doing. And so they collected the cell phones and they put them away. And they said the next 24 to 36 hours was absolute misery. I mean, because the kids went through withdrawal. I mean, actual withdrawal. And they're not getting the dopamine hit, when they're going for the lights and the, and they said, so if you can, and they said, that's where a lot of parents will give in and say, okay, no, we can't do this. They said, if you can get past that first 24 to 36 hours, they said, once that time had passed, the kids became the kids that they remembered from when they were much younger. They were engaged. They were talking with their parents about all kinds of things. I mean, they spent more quality time with one another. It's just unbelievable the difference in these kids when they really had to step away from their devices for, an extended period of time. And that's why I feel like parents should have this challenge, whether it be maybe over Christmas or even over the summer, take a vacation have your kids take a vacation from their devices and just see for yourself what they're like 2 or 3 days into it. Just try it. And again, when I had this conversation with a group of my own friends, they said, yeah, but a lot of them will give in that first 24 to 36 hours.
Absolutely.
Because the kids will start going insane. I mean, they start showing signs of withdrawal and they get ugly. It's like before they get to the good, they get real bad.
So
first. And so I thought about this with my own kids. And of course, having the discussions that I've had, and when we went through this with our daughter, our youngest, it was right at the time when smartphones had been introduced and kids were starting to try out social media. I mean, I remember hearing the word streaks, Snapchat. You got to have these streaks with all your friends. And it was, you got all this social credibility if you were, maintaining streaks.
Right.
And at the time, when we had a child who was out of school and missing, feeling like she was a connected part of her community, her school community, we felt like having social media for her was kind of a gift because it kept her connected and, it was a way for her to stay. And boy, looking back, were we wrong? And talk about having regrets. And we've discussed this with our kids who said if they could go back, they would never gotten on it. They would have stayed off of social media completely. And it's interesting because Gen Zers have regrets. They've polled a huge swath of Gen Zers about social media and said, if you could go back, would you do things differently? And the majority of them say, yes, I would definitely do things differently, which tells you there's just so much reinforcement for cutting back on the social media and the devices. And yet it just seems like it is really the hardest thing to convince parents to do. And I'll keep doing it. I mean, I'm going to keep going out and talking to parents as much as I can about it and relaying my own failures in this regard, because I feel like we failed her by not. And again, you don't know what you don't know. And at the time,
right,
we had no idea. We didn't know anything about any of the socials. I mean, I couldn't tell you what any of it did. And that's why when I talk to parents now, I say, okay, if you're going to let your kid be on Instagram or TikTok or Snapchat, any of them, you need to know more about that actual platform than they do. It's, you know, it's like, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. You need to do a deep dive and understand what that means, what they're going to see, and understand that if you have a daughter and she has body image issues and she goes out on Instagram and starts looking into anything that is body image or diet, or that she will then be bombarded with images of girls who are thin. And it is all by design. You know, it's like,
oh, yeah.
You have to know what is going to happen to your child when they start navigating that jungle on their own. And that's, again, I go back to my jungle graphic that I depict, where it shows the girl trying to figure this stuff out on her own. And that really is up to parents. Parents need to do a much better job of understanding the world that their kids are navigating so that they're not out there doing it by themselves.
So. Yeah. And I was very blessed. And our daughter was very blessed because my husband worked in IT. And so he had actually worked in IT security for a while. And so he knew a lot about these apps that I thought, oh, it's okay. And he would be like, no, because this, this, and this. And so our daughter, she got a cell phone when she was going into sixth grade, because that was the first time that she was going to be able to stay home by herself. Right. My husband and I both worked outside the home at that time. He worked an hour away. I worked 15 minutes away. And so, you know, we wanted to, if she needed something, you know, she could contact us. We did our best, and thankfully, again, because of my husband, to keep her away from cell phones and social media until I think maybe eighth grade or ninth grade. But yeah, he was definitely like, nope, she's not doing TikTok. Nope, she's not getting Snapchat, you know, and we waited, and she eventually, I don't think she ever did get TikTok, but she did eventually. And I have it too, Snapchat now. And, you know, it's a way that we communicate with one another. And, I don't know that she, you know, got into a lot of those social media apps, and she was angry with daddy because,
of course.
Daddy wouldn't let her have these things.
And you know what? And I applaud him, because that really is what we need more of right now.
Yes.
And I know there's nothing fun about being that parent. And especially if you're that parent and all the other parents are, and again, I talk to so many elementary teachers who tell me that these kids in elementary school are on all these socials.
Yes.
It's too young. I don't understand why we want our kids growing up. You know, if there's one thing that we have taken from our kids that I think is a real travesty, it's their childhood. And kids need to be kids. They need to play. They learn more through play. They learn how to negotiate. They learn how to share. They learn empathy. They learn all of this through play and how to communicate effectively with one another, and what's good and what isn't. That's what they learn through their peers and through play. And this is what we are completely eliminating from their lives and at their detriment. And it's just, it's really a travesty for our kids. And that's something that it's so easy to change. We have the power to change it right now. You know, it is as simple as being like your husband and saying, no, not going to happen. It's not going to happen right now. And I may be very unpopular with you and perhaps with some of your friends for a while. And you know what? That's a risk I'm willing to take.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. Staying off of social media, but what other types of things, what other suggestions do you have for girls, especially navigating through, you know, if they feel like they're being bullied? Or I think sometimes, you know, as we talked about that relational aggression, Mm-hmm. I don't know that, yes, they know that they had an effect because of what they've said, but I don't know that it becomes manipulative or malicious. It's just like, oh, well, this worked.
Yeah.
I'm going to try it again.
Yeah.
So what kind of things do you say to parents? Like, if this is your child who is doing this, or if this is your child who's receiving this, here are some things that, some strategies that you can use or some things to look out for.
So one of, and it's a very popular post that I post quite a lot on my socials. And I know you've been putting up my social media, which I appreciate. And my social media is really not for kids. It's for parents. And I provide tips and suggestions and all kinds of things that you can find on my website. But one of the most popular things that I post is how to know if and when your child is the mean girl. And this came about after I read a book, another book that I absolutely love that I highly recommend, which is called Little Girls Can Be Mean. And in this book, it talks about the signs of relational aggression and how to start spotting it in the behaviors of girls around your child. But I was at a school giving a talk one night, and I was talking about dealing with the mean girl and who, the, you know, talking about mean girl qualities and attributes and whatnot. And I had a mom raise her hand, and she said, my daughter doesn't have these problems at school. And I said, you know, that's interesting you say that. I said, because one of two things could be at play. I said, either she is having the problems, but she's not communicating this with you. And that's something that I really try to address through a lot of the stuff that I do, my tools. And I have books that really try to help build connection between parents and their kids. But I said, if it's not that, I said, the problem might be that your daughter is the mean girl. And there was I heard this audible gasp when I said that. And I actually had a couple of other moms that came up to me after I got done speaking, and they said, thank you for saying that. And, yeah. You know, and I said, I wasn't trying to, you know, to pinpoint anything in particular, you know, to actually bring this up in front of the rest of the group, but that's just a common thing. And I heard this when I went to the Girl Scout convention almost 2 years ago now, where I would get up and I would talk about these things. And a lot of times moms would come over to me and they would say, mean girls raise mean girls, you know, and we have a lot of Girl Scout leaders who are mean girls. And it was like, yes. Wow. And they said, they need to be reading a lot of the stuff that you're putting out there. So I actually do have, and it's on my social media, I have signs to determine whether or not your daughter is the mean girl and what to do about it. And so, I put it out there constantly. I cycle through them over and over and over because I get asked for it quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And there are things that you can do. You can kind of, the first thing you have to do, of course, is to observe. You have to be observing your kid's behavior. And I'm going to tell you, if she, and I say she, because this is really applies more to girls than boys, obviously, and I will address that in just a second. But if she is always commanding the group and always in charge and always dictating how things are going to go, you know, if she's kind of the ringleader. And so there are a lot of parents who don't want to admit, yeah, okay, you know, they kind of take pride. My kids, you know, she's really assertive, right. And I'm so proud of her. Yeah, there's a fine line between assertive and aggressive. And you know what that line is. If you're looking, you can see it. And I talk about, you know, things to look for that actually indicate, because you don't want to in any way shame them for being assertive. I think it's important for girls to learn assertiveness. And there's a great way to be assertive. But there's an aggressive side that's where you take the assertive and you get too far and they become overly aggressive and all of a sudden they're directing everything. That's a problem. And so you have to observe. And once you observe and you identify that these behaviors are going on, there are things that you can do. You can start having, again, you have to start having conversations with your kid about this stuff and trying to connect. And I know we live in a world, and I talk about this more than anything, we live in a world that struggles to connect. We are experiencing what's been called a crisis of connection. And that is because of the explosion of technology, and it's only going to get worse. Mm-hmm. Phones, technology, all of this, it forces us to connect less with each other and to stay really engaged in what we're doing on our computers, on our phones, on our devices, whatever. So we have to try to step out and start connecting more. And when I talk to parents, I say, I know it's hard to connect. And especially, and my books and things are not just designed for parents. Because when I went to one of my first vendor shows, and I have my Micrame Guide to Baking and Friendship Making, which teaches girls how to make all the different kinds of breads, pumpernickel, sourdough, rye, wheat, and others, brioche and focaccia, and it's all in this book. But in addition to that, there are stories and activities and discussion prompts. And I do that so that parents, I say, if you have an opportunity to spend time in the kitchen, and if there's one thing we learned during the pandemic, it's that the kitchen is where all the magic happens. That's the best place to have conversations where kids don't feel like they're being interrogated. It's a wonderful place to organically, and I know that's a pun, but to start having the right kinds of conversations with your kids. And it's easy to bring up. I mean, I have a recipe in my book about making a 3-ingredient Play-Doh. And while you're making this Play-Doh together, and it's so simple, while you're making it together, I talk about, you know, this is a great time to perhaps talk about change. And so I say, you know, if you're making something and you don't like how it turns out, you can smash it and start over. And then you can say to your child, gosh, wouldn't it be great if we could change everything as easily as that? Is there anything in your life that you would change if you could?
Yep.
I mean, boom, little prompts that can lead to huge discussions. And those kinds of conversations have to start happening. Connecting with your kid, observing the behavior, connecting with your kid, and then, of course, modeling the kind of behavior. You want to start tweaking the things that you know that they can change. And I even say you should be role-playing. There are friends, you know, it's like role-play some behaviors with them so they can see what their behavior looks like when you're doing it. So they actually see it from their own eyes. And it's not them. I mean, there are so many things you can do to correct the behaviors if you are willing to take the time to look for them and to address them and to connect with your kid. So, and I know I get going on this and I will talk and talk and talk. Because, I mean, that's what I know. I have all these things. And so when I went to my first vendor fair with my Micrame Guide to Baking and Friendship Making, which is back there. And I have color-coded coordinating measuring cups and spoons that have the characters so that younger bakers can figure out precise measurements. And I have a hat and apron set. You can see all this on my website. But I went out there thinking, you know, when you talk to people in business development, they say, well, you know, describe your ideal customer. And of course, I described, you know, this 30-year-old mom with 3 kids, you know, and I mean, I was like, I could just picture my ideal customer. And I went to my first vendor fair and I cannot tell you, grandmother after grandmother after grandmother after grandmother came to my booth saying, I'm the one who has the time to spend in the kitchen with my grandkids. And I'm the one looking for things to do and things to talk about while we're in the kitchen together. And I remember my first vendor fair, I sold out to grandmothers. And so I now when I talk to parents, I say, hey, this is not just a great gift for your kid. This is a great gift for one of your parents because it's like,
yes,
it provides them with things that they can do together and make meaningful memories while they're spending time doing something together in the kitchen. So, and yeah, I see you're scrolling through my website. This gives everyone. And the other thing that you did go past, which I love, I recently came out with, I've got this card game. It's called Catch the Match. And it is a positive affirmation, concentration, and memory game that has things like, I'm kind to my friends and family. I am unique and there's no one else like me. I am a dreamer and I love to dream about, oh, this one's about chasing furry friends because it's Pepper, the little dog in my line. But I have, I am powerful and stand up for myself. That's it. When necessary, I love to explore. I stand up for others. I believe in myself. There are all kinds of positive affirmations that kids, and in fact, I have a mom who reached out to me and said she got 2 of these for one for her daughter and one for her niece. And she said they love it because they're saying these things over and over and over as they play the game. And these are the kinds of positive affirmations that I really believe girls need at the right age. And I tell you, they need to believe that they can stand up for themselves and they can stand up for their friends and they, you know, it just that they can be kind, that they can, I just, these are the kinds of things that I'm trying to do to help build the right kind of girl at the right time. And I said, we need girls who are kinder to one another desperately. So get them off their phone and get them doing other things, either whether it's baking and doing stuff in the kitchen or playing these games or, you know, whatever the case is. So
this is awesome. Thank you. Are you also developing another game? Because you had mentioned that to me before, that you were developing a game to go along with what's on the YouTube channel. Is this it or is there something
else? This is not it. No, this is not it. Okay. I am trying, and that's in development. And oh, that's something I'm working on constantly. I know I want to develop an interactive game that allows you, because yes, I do have a YouTube channel and it's filled with all kinds of positivity. There are, I've got short scripts, short scripts, baking tips and short scripts, friendship tips. So I have tips on friendship, tips on baking. I have got the things to look for to see if your daughter's the mean girl. That's on my YouTube channel. So you can watch it there. And I've got a gal who is fabulous, who is helping develop the animation side, which I know when I go out to these vendor shows and things, and I say, you know, the dream of mine is one day for girls to actually recognize my characters. And that will happen if they become animated and they start doing, you know, all kinds of positive things that girls can identify with. So I'm trying to do that with like friendship songs and just, again, all positive affirmations and whatnot. So that's all on my YouTube channel. But yes, I would like a game that would be fully interactive with that somehow. And we're working on it. I say we is my group and I are working on it. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, Shannon, it has been amazing chatting with you today. And I just want to spell a few things out. So the website is mycrummyworld.com. And crummy is the word crumb, C-R-U-M-B-Y. So M-Y-C-R-U-M-B-Y-W-O-R-L-D, no hyphens, no periods, nothing, just all one word. And then any of her social media, if it needs an at symbol in front of it or it doesn't, it's going to be My Crummy World as well. You're going to find her on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I'm presuming TT is TikTok.
Yep.
And then what is PIN? That's one I don't know. Oh, Pinterest. Oh, I do know Pinterest. I just didn't know. I'm so used to each letter standing for something.
I know. Yeah, that's Pinterest.
Okay, so yes. Absolutely. Go find that information, get that from her. If you have girls in your life at all, I'm thinking of getting, you know, a couple of those affirmation card games and maybe donating them to some of the schools around my area. What you talked about before regarding the grandparents, my mother-in-law has very many grandchildren and she has grandma camp every year.
Wonderful.
And so the kids that live far away, which is a lot of her grandkids, will come and stay at her house for a number of days or a week. And she has taught the ones that, like, including my daughter, didn't get to go at grandma camp. She was just going to stay with grandma and grandpa for a while. And her experience was different because she's the oldest grandchild. And grandma and grandpa were both working. And now that grandma and grandpa are retired, grandma camp is a completely different thing. But in both scenarios, grandma spent time teaching them how to cook, how to bake. They made things together. You know, grandma's an amazing cook and baker. And so, you know, she shared those recipes with her mostly granddaughters, but I know a couple of the grandsons. She has almost all granddaughters, but a couple of the grandsons have, you know, been over. They live closer. And so they've learned some of her skills too. And yeah, grandma's not on social media and grandma's not, you know, I mean, she hardly ever sits down. So she absolutely was a great example of what you talked about.
Yep.
My mom, the same way. She always, whenever her grandkids are over, would sit and play games with them and, you know, go outside and do activities with them. And so 100%, I can see the grandparents have time and they, you know, there's just a different connection between grandparents and grandchildren. And yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of my mom, and she watched my daughter every day while I student taught. And I would go to pick her up, and my daughter would have stories of making dandelion soup and climbing trees and walking outside and, you know, finding different things with grandma and playing different board games and different things. And our grandparents are invaluable resources when they get to be grandparents, and they don't have to be the ones raising the kids. We have there's a whole nother conversation that we could have.
Oh, I know. I agree. completely. Yeah. And I just love being able to say, so when I go out now and I look at people differently as they approach my booth, because I'll see a grandparent approach and I say, oh, I have something wonderful for you. Because I said, I love, I know you spend the time, and I am just going to provide additional things for you to do. And they just like, sign us up. We're ready to go.
So that's awesome.
So great. So yes.
Well, Shannon, our time is up. We've actually gone a little over, which is fine. I like to try to stay at an hour, and we're a little over an hour, but that's okay. I very much appreciate everything that you have shared, and it is such a big problem. I don't know what other word to associate with it other than it is a problem, and it has been a problem for as long as girls have been girls, probably. I hope I never bullied anybody unintentionally. I know I didn't bully anybody intentionally, but you know, I may have said something or done something without realizing, you know, the recipient's reaction to it. But guys, make sure you find her, Shannon Addison, My Crummy World. Check her out. Thank you so much for being here. Make sure that you like and subscribe to the channel, and I will see you next time.
Thank you so much.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, SHELLEYKENOW.